Professor Allen's Comics Reading Journal for the month of May, 2016. Welcome to episode 12 of this podcast. The idea of this show is just to have a brief chat about what comics I read since the last time I did one of these episodes, which makes it pretty much the books I read during May. These books are listed weekly in blog posts at eyesandearsblog.blogspot.com, and those are regularly reposted on Facebook and Twitter, so you can find those lists. But those posts aren't really spoilers for this episode, since those are just lists, and here we get a little review, a little critique, a little more discussion. But first, a little feedback on last month's episode. The great Michael Bradley wrote in from the state of Indiana and the Superman and Batman podcast. Alan, interesting you'd mention The Shadow Strikes in the most recent Comics Reading Journal episode. I recently found nearly the entire series, missing only the final issue and the annual, in, wait for it, a quarter bin! Ah, Michael, I'm so proud, man. So proud. He admits that he wasn't looking for Shadow comics and has no idea if he'll enjoy them, but I decided that 30 books for the price of 2 modern-day comics was worth taking a shot. I'll need to track down those Doc Savage issues, though. Michael. You see, that's why discount bins are so enjoyable. Dollar, 50 cent, 3 for a buck, quarter, whatever. It's all good. We also heard from the other Michael B., podcasting's Michael Bailey, who has been catching up on all the shows on the network. He specifically said he liked the Comics Reading Journal and wished that he could cover a lot of comics in an episode while also being brief. Christopher Ouellette said nice things about the last episode, as did the Sutherlands. Darren commented that he was shocked that I paid full price for comics. What is the world coming to? The shocking true event revealed on the latest Comics Reading Journal. It's frightening! Seriously, though, really enjoyed hearing you talk about Doc Savage. I've always loved good adventure comics and haven't read Doc Savage in years. Time to visit the quarter bin to look for some issues. Yes, Darren, yes you do. Although you'll evidently have to fight Michael Bradley for them. Thanks, everybody, for the feedback. And, of course, thanks, everybody, just for listening. And now, on to the books I read last month. As we do on this show, we categorize the books. And first are the books that I read specifically for podcast appearances. The homework books. And it just worked out this way. But there are a ton of homework books this month. Secret Origins 39. I only read the Man-Bat half of this one, actually. But that's because I bullied myself onto another episode of Ryan Daly's Secret Origins podcast, talking about one of my favorite C-listers, Man-Bat. So listen to episode 39 of that show for the full report. But spoilers, this origin retelling got a lot of the facts right. It hit most of the beats that needed to be hit, but I think it lacked heart a little bit. And the art is good, but it ain't Neil Adams. Man-Bat number 1. Now, this is a book that reprints Man-Bat's first 3 appearances from Detective 400, 402, and 407. So I read those to prep for the Secret Origins to do the compare and contrast. And this reprint tells the original and better version of Kirk Langstrom's origin story. And again, Neil Adams' art doesn't hurt the storytelling. And this is where DC started telling the types of stories with that angst and pathos and really depth that we sort of think of as representing their Bronze Age era. I bought this one at a convention a few years after it was published in 1984, and I can only assume that I paid less than its $2.50 cover price. I mean, I hope so. Planetary number 1. This was for an appearance on Back to the Bins. This was the book that Jim Dietz was going to bring to the show, but he ended up with a family situation and had to bow out. But I read the book anyway. I've read a little bit of Warren Ellis, but never any Planetary. I liked the sci-fi vibe of this, the big idea of the book of multiple universes as like a snowflake in something like 200,000-dimensional space. And in terms of a first issue, this one actually did what a first issue is supposed to do. It made me want to know what was going to happen in issue two. I don't know if I've ever seen any of these books on the cheap, but if I do, now I might consider picking a few up. The book I covered on that episode was Astro City 17, which I talked about a few months ago here when I read it for the first time. For episode 43 of Shortbox Showcase, Emily and I talked about indie and small press books that I picked up at a local small press and alternative press convention that I went to. That discussion included a lot of mini-comics and webcomics, but we also talked about two traditional-sized, traditional-looking comics. So both of these are available on the web, but I'll mention them here. Miracle Force, number one. It's a standard story of a group of powered misfits. Good stuff for being, you know, produced at a semi-professional level. And then my favorite of the bunch, Twisted Tales of Two-Fisted Justice, number one. It was created by Brent Daniels and Brandon Flagg from Elemental P Press. This was a weird Western character as a tough, noir-style private investigator in the 30s. It was really a case of two great tastes, weird Western and noir, that tasted great together. I'm really looking forward to when they wrap the next issue up on the web, and hopefully they'll have that one available for print purchase as well. On to Quarterbin books that I read. Episode 73 was the Free Comic Book Day episode, and I picked up six books. Talked about them on that episode. The short version is that I really dug most of what I picked up. Again, there's more detail in that episode. But in order from best to less best, I'd probably go with DC Superhero Girls, Archie, Lady Mechanica, Rom, Doctor Who, and The Phantom. But that's pretty hard to say because I really liked all of the first five of those, so it's pretty hard to put them in rank order. I enjoyed the event this year very much. Between the free books and the sales, my Free Comic Book Day stats were 2 stores, 15 books, $3.23. And yes, Stella, that is with tax. Episode 74 of the Quarter Bin, I covered 3 books from the 1998 Girl Frenzy event from DC Comics. It was a 5th-week event that presented independent, mostly disconnected one-shots featuring female characters. It seemed to be a legitimate outreach to female fans, and I have no idea how that event is remembered today, other than the fact that I found 5 of the 7 issues in discount bins the last month or so, at the total cost of just under $3. On the podcast episode, I covered the 3 actual Quarterbin books, Tomorrow Woman, Lois Lane, and The Raven, so the details are there. But I really liked the event enough that when I saw 2 more of the books in dollar bins, I picked those up as well, so I can talk about them over here. And those 2 books were Girl Frenzy, Batgirl, and Girl Frenzy, The Mist. The Batgirl one took place in a pre-Oracle world, with Bab still operating as Batgirl. She took on Victor Zsasz in this one, and there was some good action between the two. It did have the feel of a late 90s book with some gruesome moments and the art of Jim Ballant. And it was a quick read for sure, but the story mostly worked for me, and Batgirl certainly came across as tough and heroic. And I liked the throwback nature, at least at that time, of seeing Barbara Gordon back active as Batgirl. I was not familiar with The Mist, because one of the disadvantages of being out of comics in the mid to late 90s is that I missed James Robinson's Starman. Like, completely missed it. Like, I've never read a single issue of it. Missed it. So this one I have no context for, but the story features Black Hand kidnapping The Mist's son and her getting him back, with a little help from Mary Marvel. Again, a quick read, no doubt, but another really good one-off story. All in all, I thought the Girl Frenzy event was a pretty good idea and pretty well executed. Again, more details on that on the Quarterbin episode. For episode 75 of the Quarterbin, which won't come out until next month, I read Marvel 2-in-1 57. This was for an episode with Paul Spataro. And this was his choice from a list of about 10 books that I had from Marvel mid to late 70s, which is his favorite era of comics. As of this recording, we have not recorded that one yet, but I trust it'll end up being a good episode. And getting pretty far ahead of myself on quarter bins for episode 76, which also won't be out until late next month, I read Ms. Tree Quarterly 9 and 10. Actually, at this point, it was Ms. Tree Special. And actually, only number 9 was technically for the quarter bin. With my guest Mark Sweeney, we covered number 10 on the feed for his podcast, I'm the Gun. So it was a bit of a crossover we did there. And as good as those conversations were, and spoilers, as good as the books were, there was a bit of a melancholy to the recording, because sadly, these are the last two appearances of Ms. Tree in comic books. And they were from almost 25 years ago. And a couple comics I read to follow along listening to podcast episodes. Secret Origins 36. I picked this one up for cheap for following along with Ryan Daly. This one featured the Hal Jordan Green Lantern, Poison Ivy, and Pie Face. I have to mention in particular the Poison Ivy origin, which was written by Neil Gaiman and drawn by Mark Buckingham. And yes, it is as good as that sounds. It was great. Between appearing on Ryan's show and reading some issues just to follow along, I've probably read a dozen or so separate origins, and that one was by far the best. It captures the psychological power of Ivy, the hold that she can have on a man. It was terrific. And the Trekker Omnibus, pages 289 to 296. This was the story Mercy Killing, which I read to follow along with Trekker Talk, episode 17, hosted by the excellent Ruth and Darren Sutherland. It was a short story and had a bit of a darker feel than prior Trekker stories, but I liked it. And it was colored in the omnibus, and that always helps. On to the new comics that we read right off the shelves, and these are all from DC, which means that Rebirth affected them to various degrees. Starfire 12. This was a nice wrap-up to the run to Starfire's time in Key West. She has a party and says goodbye to all of her new friends, and the issue ends perfectly. Flying off with her alien pet thing, she says, "Now let us see what new adventures are in store for us." I love that this series did exactly what I wanted to do, which is rehabilitate Starfire after what I think of as a debacle in the New 52. I hope she comes back soon in this new, adorable, positive characterization. I also like the new character of Atli and her people under the Earth, and I hope that she and they are not gone forever. Constantine the Hellblazer 12, now John, will survive Rebirth, so this issue does not put an end to this storyline with Neron having taken control of all the mystical, magical elements of New York. John is back in the city after a brief trip last issue to California, but he's been completely outwitted by Neron. All of his deals have come up bad, and he does not know what to do. And maybe he's figured it out, and he crashes a meeting of some other powerful, magical allies. He has an idea, and as he says on the last page of this issue, it's irredeemably ill-conceived, breaks every bloody rule of magic, and will probably all perish in an extra grisly way. Who's in? DC Bombshells 12 and 13 as a digital first book. My impression is that this will also survive Rebirth, as it's sort of out on its own. The title was double shipped last month, so we've got two issues to talk about. The Battle of Britain storyline ended in 12, with Mira taking on the monster Nereus, who would rule a flooded Britain. But Mira sacrificed her powers to slay the Kraken. But the enemy is not fully defeated until another, greater sacrifice is made. Issue 13 starts year 2 for the Bombshells, and we move into 1941. This issue takes place totally on the home front in Gotham City, and things are getting kind of crazy there. The story gives us the Batgirls. We get Lois Lane, Killer Frost, Penguin, and Hugo Strange, and Mayor Harvey Dent. But he seems to be under the thrall of one of the evil, villainous villains doing his bidding, saying evil, villainous things. And, of course, the big one for this month, DC Comics Rebirth. I'm not going to go into detail right here or spoilers. I'm guessing that Emily and I will cover it at some point on an upcoming Shortbox Showcase. And if you want a spoiler review, there are plenty of them out there. What I can say at this point is that I really enjoyed this, and it did a lot of things right. It laid a lot of groundwork, and I think that following the path laid out here is a possible way for DC to get back in the good graces of some of their ex-fans. If you're one of the people waiting for DC to apologize for the last decade, that's pretty much what this book seems to be. There were specific items, specific events, specific language that made it clear that they recognized how they had drifted one direction, too far one direction, and that this is the start of something new. I hope they continue down this rebirthed path, and there's a long way to go, but I think this might be the best start that they could have pulled off. And on to regular reading that I did, Daffy Duck number 66. This is from 1970, although most of the stories were reprints, mainly from early to mid-60s. I am a big fan of Daffy. I think that Saturday morning cartoons were at their best when Daffy went head-to-head with Bugs Bunny. Now, in this issue, there was no Bugs, but two stories did feature Yosemite Sam, although he was never actually called that in either story. The Daffy stories were good, and actually a little longer than most other humor stories I've read from this era, 8 pages, as opposed to 5 or 6, and they were enjoyable. The backup stories in these books are never all that good, and that was the case with this one, too. My buddy, the great Canadian Rob Lance, sent another care package recently, and in there was a new issue featuring his country's greatest hero. No, not him. Or him. No, not her, but keep thinking. That's right, he sent a copy of all-new classic Captain Canuck, #1. And yes, I'm also confused with the words all-new and classic in the same title, but they're Canadian. Who am I to question? This is, by the way, the cover by Mike Ruth, a buddy of Rob's, and it's pretty dynamic. The good captain is busting through a background made up of prior Captain Canuck covers, and he is crashing through in the shape of a maple leaf. So that's a pretty great cover. The story sends the captain on a time-hopping adventure. Canuck is a few decades prior to when he belongs. Then he ends up in caveman times, and then in Viking times, and then he lands in the 1800s, but some of his great enemies meet him by punching him. And from listener Gregor Rujo's care package that recently came in, Doctor Who, The Time Machination. This was a one-off from a few years back when IDW still had the license, and it's a goofy story that takes place in Victorian times when the Queen and the original Torchwood were on a constant lookout for the Doctor, and not because they were fans. But he manages to escape and get the TARDIS charged up along with his friend H.G. Wells, who after this intervention would go on to write The Time Machine. Nice story that was both self-contained and self-referential. Standard Comics, #1, this was an interesting one. Contained reprints of stories from the 50s and had a great variety of stuff. There were horror books, war stories, and a fair amount of romance, too. The main draw of this collection was that the creators included in the volume included Alex Toth, Ross Andrew, and George Tuska. Interesting stuff. And Fantastic Comics, #24. Now, this title originally ran 23 issues, published by Fox Features, the last one in 1941. Image Comics published Fantastic Comics, #24, 67 years later, with new stories drawn and written in the varying styles of books and comic strips from that era, and they used characters from the original run of Fantastic, such as Samson, the Golden Knight, and Captain Kidd Explorer. They even put in the collection ads from old-time comic books as well, which really gave the entire issue a fun feel. None of the stories stood out per se, because this was really about the total package of collecting a Golden Age vibe to stories. And on that count, I think this succeeded. The issue can be found in databases under the title The Next Issue Project from 2008. That project, in addition to Fantastic Comics, also included quote-unquote next issues of Silver Streak Comics and Crack Comics. My family took a trip to Seattle recently, and of course the first thing I did was look to see if there was a Half-Price Books in the city. And there was. And it was even on the same side of the town we were staying in. So Emily and I headed out there one morning, and I made it back with 12 25-cent comics. A few went in the quarter bin database, a few right on the reading pile, and a few that I actually did read. Stars and STRIPE, Stripe, 0 and 1. This is a Jeff Johns series from 1999. That is an updating or a modernizing or maybe a refreshing of the Star Spangled Kid and Stripesy story, turning those old-time characters into legacy characters. This title ran about a year and a half, and I had never read any of them before this. These issues tell the story of Courtney Whitmore and her mother, who have just moved to Blue Valley with her new stepfather, Pat Dugan. On her first day of school, she gets into a fight, finds out that people are going missing from school, and makes powerful enemies. She goes through a box of Pat's stuff and discovers that he used to be Stripesy. She takes his old costume, modernizes a bit, and turns it into something maybe more fitting for a 1999-era teenager. Pat dons some robot armor, and the dynamic of teen hero and adult sidekick is back in action. I enjoyed this one, and I think that in some ways it was ahead of its time. Courtney's attitude, the entire vibe of the comic, reminds me of some of the modern Marvel books starring high school girls, which I've really liked, such as Silk and the Kamala Khan Ms. Marvel. It was fun, it was light, and it was kind of surprising to read this from a DC book in 1999. So maybe it was a case of the right book at the wrong time. The Gru Chronicles, Book 2. I love Gru. I have a dozen issues in my collection, mostly from the independent years and then when it moved over to Epic/Marvel. But these were very early stories. I don't think I'd read any of these before. The Chronicles were 48-page square-bound collections published in 1989, again, collecting some really early Gru stuff. This one had short stories that first appeared in Destroyer Duck or Epic Illustrated, as well as the first two Gru the Wanderer issues, which at that point were Pacific Comics. Those were from like 1983, I think. What I like about Gru is that these are legitimately funny stories. I love the details that Sergio Aragonés puts into the drawing and the plotting. In terms of the exact script, I don't know how much this is to credit to Mark Evanier as the translator or how much is in the original Aragonés versions, but however that relationship worked out, generally speaking, it tended to work very well. This was a very enjoyable read, and any time I can get those square-bound or prestige format oversized 40-48-page books at quarter bins, they almost always get picked, especially if there's something as good as Gru. All right, time to take a break, play a promo here, and when we come back, we'll talk about trades, long runs, series, and graphic novels that I read last month.
Here at Quark's, customer satisfaction is our primary concern.
I'd say we just found our way into a wormhole.
I'm Kira Norris.
Lieutenant Commander Worf, reporting for duty, sir.
You're the best crew any captain ever had. This may be the last time we're all together.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. For Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
It is quite simply, Commander. The journey you have always been destined to take.
Sensors are not functioning.
We've lost all contact with the space station.
What the hell is happening out there?
Shields up. Damage report.
Battle stations.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Listen to the prophets. A Deep Space Nine Two True Freaks presentation with Sean Engel
and Andrew Layla.
And now with 100% more Paul Spataro.
And we're back. And then last up, the trades, graphic novels, long runs, and miniseries that I've recently read, including Man-Bat 1 through 5. I said I went on a Man-Bat kick in prep for the Secret Origins episode, but we didn't talk much about this 2006 miniseries, so I'll talk about it a bit here. This was written by Bruce Jones, with art by Mike Huddleston. This is a story that features Hush taking on Black Mask for control of the underbelly of Gotham City, and one of them is taking advantage of a very confused Kirk Langstrom. A series of grisly murders occurs across Gotham and its surrounding area, and Kirk Langstrom's DNA makes him the leading suspect in all the crimes, including the murder of his own family. Langstrom doesn't remember anything, but he's convinced that he did it. But the evidence doesn't all point that way, and Batman just doesn't believe it, or maybe he doesn't want to believe it. Like I told Ryan in that episode, I really like Man-Bat, although I do recognize his limitations as an ongoing character. I think that if he has a long-term home in comics, it's the occasional miniseries every few years, like this one. Maybe that's the medium that serves Kirk Langstrom best. Manhunter, number one. This is a 1984 reprint special, collecting the original Archie Goodwin and Walt Simonson stories from 1973, 1974. They were part of the era of the 100-page-long detective issues. These stories appeared as 8-page stories from Detective 437 to 442, and then as the cover story, a 20-pager or so, in which Manhunter teamed up with Batman himself. I consider myself a fan of Batman and the Bat books, but my favorite title, when it lives up to its name, is Detective Comics. And this really was a great detective-style story. I have no idea where I got this reprint from or how long I've had it, but I've been a fan of Manhunter for a while now, and this may well have been the first stories I ever read featuring him. This is the Paul Kirk version. He's like the aforementioned Man-Bat, in that I think there's great potential for his stories, but there are limitations. So I think he is best used as a few and far between type of character. But this one is great. It's a story told over about 70 pages, complete with ninjas, clones, secret societies, and Batman. And Goodwin and Simonson really at the top of their games, especially Walt Simonson in particular. He's a really hungry young artist. Really, really good stuff. I mentioned on the Free Comic Book Day episode of the Quarterbin that I had loaded up my Nook with a bunch of stuff from the Digital Comic Museum, digitalcomicmuseum.com. These are public domain digital books from the 40s and 50s, and I read my first batch of those. Strange Planets, 9, 10, 12, 16, and 18. This is technically a reprint title from the 60s, but the material originally appeared in the 50s. And I've long been a fan of science fiction in my comic books. Adam Strange is one of my all-time top characters. And I've liked various sci-fi stories and miniseries over the years. The stories in this issue introduced me to characters like Rod Hathaway, space detective. And now get this, he's a detective in space. And also characters like Lucky Dale, girl detective, as well as a range of independent one-off characters and stories. Lots of stuff in if you think of the maybe Flash Gordon style of story. Because this book is a reprint title, often the last story, or maybe the last story or two, will be a non-space book of some kind, more of maybe a jungle adventure, or someone like Lucky Dale, Girl Detective. And some of these are okay, but I would have preferred these issues to be all about Strange Planets, what the title is about. So I prefer the space adventure or sci-fi stuff to jungle stories or exploration adventure stories. One issue had some historical biographical stuff, like the story of Marco Polo, that sort of thing. So it ended up being a very odd, really uneven mix of stuff for a book called Strange Planets, unless they're including Earth on their list of strange planets. America's Greatest Comics, 1, 3, 6, 7, and 8. This is a hero anthology title from Fawcett, 100 pages long. So, of course, each issue leads with a long Captain Marvel story, like 20 pages or so, with Bullet Man and Spy Smasher also in every issue. Other characters that appeared more than once were Mr. Scarlet and Commander Yank. One of the things I really liked about these issues was that they only had usually 6 stories. So if the Shazam story would run 20 pages or so, the other one still had 13 to 15 pages. So these were legitimate long-form stories with multiple locations, multiple action sequences, lots of characters, twists and turns, and I really liked that. So between the length of the story and the style of the story, the style of the writing, they were long, they took a while. But for the most part, these were pretty good. Captain Marvel was almost always the best story in the issue. Maybe Spy Smasher edged out Bullet Man and Bullet Girl for second place. The other features were less and less consistent, more hit and miss in their entertainment value. But so far for this first foray into, you know, Golden Age digital public domain books, pretty well satisfied. I mentioned my good buddy, great Canadian Rob Lance, who sent a care package recently, and in there was Patsy Walker, a.k.a. Hellcat, 1 through 5. The timing was great, because after reading them, I wrapped them up for Emily's birthday, which was about a week or two later. And yes, I did say that the books were both from me and Rob. And I really enjoyed this. It was an all-ages book that had a little bite to it, but it was mostly light and sometimes flat-out funny. The basic setup is that Patsy has started up a temp agency for powered people who just don't want to be full-time heroes, but can do impressive, super-powered work nonetheless. She's also hounded by her history as the lead character in the Patsy Walker romance comics, which in this version were written by her mother. Her prior best friend is reprinting those books, even though there's an issue with rights, so she has her buddy and former employer, She-Hulk Jessica Walters, as her lawyer. There's lots of action, lots of drama, like I said, some humor, and the artwork is fun with a nice all-ages flair to it. And the letters pages are full of, at first, staff, and then readers who send in pictures of their cats. And I approve of that. Avengers, The Infinity Gauntlet, 1 through 4. This is from 2010. I would have called it Doom versus Thanos, but I'm just a lowly podcaster finance professor and not a comic book company executive, so why would they listen to me? This one came to me via the aforementioned Greg Arujo. This miniseries actually features my favorite 3 comic book characters, Dr. Doom, US-1, and Dr. Doom. This is reminiscent of Dr. Doom and the Masters of Evil, because there are many moments of humor, some of it quite silly. But in context, it all works. Like the part where US-1's mom makes Doom make sandwiches for the rest of the team. She caught Doom unawares, he explains. In the story, half of the world's population has disappeared. But from there, it goes a radically different direction from the Left Behind books. And the Left Behind movies. But let's quickly change the subject from them, okay? So, the remaining Fantastic Two join up with Wolverine, Ms. Marvel, the Hulk, and Spider-Man to head into deep space before heading out in a super space truck piloted by US-1 himself. The only problem is that they forgot to invite to their little Save the World soiree the man most capable of actually saving the world. Fortunately, Victor Von Doom gently and politely offers his services. And of course, the team recognizes their obvious oversight, and after the appropriate amount of respectful groveling, they invite him on their grand adventure. And since they're going up against Thanos, as it turns out, having the good doctor along comes in handy. In issue 3, our crew finds Thanos, and he makes mincemeat of both Hulk and Wolverine. And the issue ends with him going head-to-head with Doc Doom, and I'd like to tell you what happened in issue 4, but spoilers! Let's just say, Hail Doom, and leave it at that, okay? Shade the Changing Man, 5 through 10. I talked about issues 1 through 4 last episode. We pick up the narrative, such that there is, with Shade's continuing road trip through American madness, or as he calls it, the American scream. We spent 2 issues in Hollywood, which is a place that's already weird enough without the impact of the M-Vest. We stay in California with some time in the hippie era of San Francisco, Haight-Ashbury and all that. Shade ends up in a whacked-out, acid-fueled commune, and then our hero gets himself reanimated as a baby, as a big, bigger than an adult human baby, and then part of San Francisco was surgically removed from the country. But look, it's hard to explain. And then we've got a body snatcher thing about persecution, and that's when it gets kind of weird. Did I mention this is a weird comic? Because this is a weird comic. And it has a distinct point of view in terms of examining what's good and bad about American society. And I'm not in line all the time with that particular critique. And since the critique, that theme, is such a major part of the story, it definitely affects my view of these 10 issues that I've read. So it's accurate to say that I appreciate this book, that I respect the boldness, the audacity of the storytelling, but I don't necessarily enjoy it, if that makes sense. The Walking Dead, 133 to 138. I'm reading these from Library Trades. I've mentioned that before. And this one was the 23rd paperback collection. At the end of the last trade, members of our team ran into Whisperers, who seem that they may be walkers with a level of sentience. But we learn here that that's not the case. It's another community, ordinary, quote-unquote, humans, who wear masks of the dead as a way of moving with those hordes, as a way of being protected from them, actually. Our crew has used this trick in the short term, and if you're watching Fear the Walking Dead, one of the characters uses that trick a lot. But doing this as part of a long-term community survival strategy, that's a whole different thing. But it's really not crazy, except that for Rick and Maggie and our heroes, any strategy or theory that is different from them is wrong and must be stopped. So conflict is coming. And in these 6 issues, the lead character is actually Carl. He drives the action, and that's an interesting change. There's a theory that I heard 3 or 4 years back that posited that this would eventually turn into Carl's story, that he would be the driving force, he would be the lead character, that's where it was going in the long run. I'm not sure that that's going to turn out to be the case, but if it does, then maybe this is the trade where that pivot, where that change began. And I think that's everything. Look, I'm on summer break. I am reading a lot of comic books. These episodes may end up being a few minutes longer than they are when I'm, you know, doing full-time teaching and stuff. In terms of my favorite reads of the month, it was great experimenting with those Golden Age books, the Captain Marvel stories in particular. Patsy Walker Hellcat was a blast to read. Manhunter, Man-Bat, and Ms. Tree were all treats. And no spoilers, DC Rebirth was really good too. This was a good month for what I read. But Hail Doom, the highlight of the month, was the Doctor Doom US-1 team-up. Are you kidding me? Avengers and the Infinity Gauntlet miniseries. That was epic. And I'd probably have to pick issue 2 as the best of those. Hail Doom. Feel free to let me know what you think of this episode or what you think of any of these books that I mentioned, especially if you've read any of them. You can send that feedback via email to relativelygeeky@gmail.com or as a comment on the Facebook or blog post for this episode. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. I expect the next episode to feature the Rain in Hell miniseries, which I thought I would get to this month, but I didn't. So that's on the list. Probably going to get the first couple Wonder Woman issues out of Rebirth. And I'm heading back out on vacation, so I'll probably pack up a whole bunch of trades and maybe some single issues as well to read. And of course, probably some more Golden Age stuff is coming. So thanks again for listening. Really appreciate it. keep the pages turning.